The Man David by Brother Harry Tennant. Chapter 3 continues. Now that David had fled, his own family in Bethlehem were in grave danger. Their annihilation would have been part of the systematic scourge of Saul. David saw to it that this should not take place. Perhaps, too, his brethren and family were more than ready to throw in their lot with the illustrious, though exiled, young man. The initiative appears to have come from the family, who, hearing of David's plight, went down thither to him. This was an act of love, and one to which David responded with that largeness of heart which endeared him to all around. But the cave of Adullam was no place for aged people. Agility, endurance, and resourcefulness were needed, and a willingness to exist on slender rations from time to time. It would have been churlish to turn his parents away, especially since they'd come to give him support. Moreover, the word of the Lord, engraven on David's heart, was beyond doubt. Honour thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which thy Lord giveth thee. He decided to seek sanctuary for his parents in the land of Moab. They had ancient connections with that country, since it was Ruth's homeland. David's choice was governed by the fact that his parents could not live a normal, open life in Israel without being in constant danger of being apprehended by Saul's men. This would have meant death. Moab, a foreign but not at this time openly an enemy country, offered some refuge. David made the journey of some 50 miles and sought the personal aid of the king of Moab in Mizpah, who consented to receive the elderly folks. "Until I know what God will do for me," was the time limit set by David. The mission accomplished, and it's possible that David went twice, first to seek permission and then to deliver his parents, he returned to Adullam, where his brethren remained with him. One of them, Eliab the eldest, became a prince in David's kingdom, where he is shown as Elihu. See 1 Chronicles 27:18. There are several psalms which speak of David's trouble thus far in his experiences, psalms which reveal a deep sensitivity of spirit and a trust in the everywhereness of God. The poor man cried, and the Lord heard him and saved him out of all his troubles. The Lord is nigh unto them that are of a broken heart, and saveth such as be of a contrite spirit. That's from Psalm 34 concerning David's stay in Gath. In God have I put my trust, I will not be afraid. What can flesh do unto me? For thou hast delivered my soul from death. Hast thou not delivered my feet from falling, that I may walk before God in the light of the living? Psalm 56, again concerning Gath. The small company in the cave of Adullam grew daily. A mixture of malcontents came and cast in their lot with David. Men in debt, perhaps innocently, and subject to oppression by relentless usurers, or perhaps fleeing from their proper responsibilities. Men in distress. How wide a connotation one can give to this word. It embraces all mankind in times of need, and those who are discontented or bitter of soul. 400 men mustered round the former captain over the army of Saul, and he became their leader. And there's little doubt that he had a great capacity for organisation, whether in peace or war, and for bringing the best out of men. This desultory, low-spirited company was forged into a closely knit, responsible and loyal troop, energised by the courageous, godly, faithful strength of a man who had not where to lay his head. It's not easy to hide 400 men. Movement of provisions and supplies, fires for cooking, regular journeys for water and numerous other necessary excursions from hiding, even though made by night, were telltale signs for those who wished to inform Saul. Moreover, it would seem that there was almost general knowledge that David was in those parts. Sooner or later, it would be forced upon David to move his company. Perhaps we imagine that the 400 were largely a support for David, a buttress to his faith. As they arrived from all quarters, they must have been a source of comfort and hope to the lonely man. But they became his responsibility. In the ultimate, they were his care, a new flock of sheep threatened by beasts of prey. Tending them, giving them discipline, imparting something of his own faith, were part of the daily routine and were essential ingredients of David's own training for the major responsibility which would later fall on his shoulders, the care of all the churches, has been the experience in one form or another of many of the Lord's chosen men. Moses, Joseph, David, Nehemiah, Paul, and preeminently the Lord Jesus Christ. All who will truly serve must carry responsibility. Bearing the yoke involves pulling the load, a load which consists not of one's own life only, but that of the community to which we belong. A sense of community is a sense of true fellowship, and awareness of all rather than mere self-awareness is the key to this feeling. There's a need for more and more of us, especially young people, to learn this lesson. Every community has plenty of learners, but not many lifters. It's good to make the choice at the right time of life. Had not our Lord Jesus lifted the world's great burden, none of us would have been able to lean on him. Our privilege is to be able to take his yoke upon us. The eyes of the Lord are in every place, beholding the evil and the good, so it says in Proverbs 15, verse 3. And thus it was that divine direction came to deliver David from danger. Gad the seer told him to get into the land of Judah. Whether Gad the seer had taken refuge with David at this time is not wholly clear. If not, he'd certainly sought him out. And the word of the Lord to David certainly was an opportunity for him to find safety. It was also a test of his obedience. Self-reliance was a natural quality in a man frequently left to his own resources. Why not, therefore, choose one's own places of hiding? Gad the seer had less experience of the terrain and of the needs of fighting men or of men in flight. David could well have questioned the wisdom of fleeing into the land of Judah. That he did not is proof that the Lord was his refuge, and that he sought guidance daily in prayer from the one who above all others could keep him in safety. Forsaking, not unthankfully, the stronghold of Adullam, the leader and his men moved 20 or 30 miles to the forest of Harith on the mountains south of Hebron. Meanwhile, Saul, cheated of David, whose death he'd hoped to encompass, moped under the royal tree in Gibeah and lamented the lack of confidence which his men showed in him. He suspected that the hearts of many of them were with David and not with him. Doeg the Edomite stepped forward seeking favour, implying the king with a knowledge of the secret departure of David from Nob. Saul was furious and called for the whole family of priests to be brought from Nob. Ahimelech vainly protested his innocence, and Saul gave command for all the priests to be put to death. No one moved to obey the king's word until Doeg's sword completed the work of treachery against the Lord's priests. Thus Saul blotted out the family of Eli, according to the word which had come to Samuel in 1 Samuel chapter 2. With the exception of one man, upon whom the final judgment fell later on, in 1 Kings 2 verse 27. The man who escaped was Abiathar, Ahimelech's son, and he fled for safety to the company of David. Thus was the tabernacle orphaned in a day, and both the priesthood and the Lord's anointed were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. The city of the high priest was intended to be a city of refuge for those who fled from the men of blood, but now it was the turn of the priest to find a haven with the king. There's little doubt that David was instrumental in his lifetime in lifting the priesthood to its highest standing since the days of Moses, and his words to Abiathar breathe a sense of godly assurance. Abide thou with me, fear not, for he that seeketh my life seeketh thy life, but with me thou shalt be in safeguard. Abiathar remained faithful to David through many vicissitudes, and not until David was near the end of his days and Adonijah his son usurped the throne, did Abiathar falter and forsake the right way by casting his lot with the upstart king. This was a grievous error, and it cost him the priesthood when Solomon banished him to his portion in Anathoth of Benjamin. It's remarkable that David's absence from public life and responsibility did not diminish his compassion for the people and his desire to render such help as he was able. Accordingly, when Keilah, a town on the edge of the lowland plain which runs up the coastal tract of Palestine and some 5 or 6 miles from Adullam, was attacked by the Philistines at the time of threshing, David was stirred to offer help. Seeking guidance of the Lord, he was told to deliver the city, and this he had succeeded in doing, and in his pursuit of the Philistines was able to take a spoil of cattle, partly for his own needs, one would imagine, and partly for the men of Keilah. David and his men returned to the city, a somewhat risky thing to do since the routes of escape were restricted by the outer walls and gates. But needless to say, news of David's whereabouts soon reached Saul, and he set out to take the bird in the trap. But David's intelligence system was more than a match for Saul's superior strength of numbers, and long before Saul reached Keilah, David consulted the Lord whether or not he should remain or escape. Ever since the day that God came and made known the divine guidance, David had sought it. Having accepted it the first time, he could afterwards seek it in faith. Besides this, a new blessing had come David's way. Abiathar had arrived with the ephod, the most significant of the high priestly garments. The ephod, made of fine linen, cunningly worked with gold, blue, purple and silver, like the veil in colour, was the upper garment of the body worn by the high priest, and covered the chest. 2 shoulder pieces were designed to hold the 2 onyx stones on which the names of the children of Israel were engraven, 6 or 5. And finally, the breastplate of its 12 precious stones was secured on the front of the ephod, completing the significance of name-bearing, judgment and mercy. The breastplate was known as the breastplate of judgment. How the high priest received and made known the judgment of the Lord is not known. There are various conjectures, some of them drawn from Jewish tradition. The high priest was the bearer of the Urim and the Thummim, 2 words which mean lights and perfections. What were these? Were they the names of the stones in the breastplate? And was the message of God revealed in some way in the stones themselves? Or were there 2 separate stones kept in a pocket behind the breastplate, as some surmise, although without direct scriptural evidence, which revealed a yes or no answer when guidance was sought? Neither of these explanations satisfies the evidence recorded concerning the consultations of David and the answers he received. So it would seem, for anything other than direct speech to satisfy as an explanation. Both the questions and the answers are too detailed to take a yes or no answer, and that is why it would seem that for anything other than direct speech to satisfy an explanation. So far of our studies have led us, we believe, inquiring of the Lord meant putting the question to the high priest wearing the ephod and breastplate, assuming the ephod and breastplate to be intact at this time in history, and the Lord said meant an answer through the mouth of the priest in his capacity as bearer of the judgment of God. So David inquired of the Lord through Abiathar and received a very clear answer that to stay in Keilah would mean betrayal by the men of the city into the hands of Saul. Truly, the winter's wind is not so unkind as man's ingratitude. The men of Keilah would have been spoiled by the Philistines had not David intervened on their behalf, but the kindness was soon forgotten, and David with his men, now about 600, went again into the woods, this time in the country of the Ziphites, south of Hebron, and there were strongholds in the wooded hills and sufficient cover to hide the movement of men and beasts. And Saul sought him every day, but God delivered him not into his hand.